Last week, Sweden left behind 200 years of neutrality and officially joined NATO. It comes after nearly 2 years of negotiations and deals a heavy blow to the Russian president by handing him the very thing he wanted to avert, the NATO alliance expansion. So what does this all imply for the region's geopolitics and beyond? For further insights, we now connect with Professor Kim Byung-ju of the Hankuk University of Foreign Studies. Good morning, Professor Kim.
Good morning.
Nice to have you again.
Thank you very much.
Maybe we can begin with a sit down here in South Korea. The U.S. Army General Christopher Cavoli and the head of the U.S. European Command and the Supreme Allied Commander Europe was in town last Thursday to meet with Korea's National Security Advisor and the Defense Minister. What do we know in terms of what they discussed at this sit down?
Supreme Allied Commander Europe is a position where the commander could actually set up overall strategy of the NATO defense operation, military operation as a whole, and also even in a position to demand, sending and adding troops into the NATO force. So it's the chief commander of the NATO forces all together. NATO composed of 32 different members, now adding Sweden and so on. It's a huge force, and that's the chief commander. And this is the first time for Korea to have the Supreme Allied Commander Europe here in this country. So the military strategists and experts took a note of that. When General Cavoli came into town, he met with, as you mentioned, the National Security Advisor Chang Woo-shin and also Defense Minister Shin Won-sik. So fitting kind of planning of his visit here in Korea. In his meeting with the National Security Advisor, it was disclosed that they talked about the obvious issues of Korea-NATO cooperation, Ukraine situation, and Russia-North Korea ties these days. And when we say first one, the Korea-NATO cooperation, that system of cooperation has been kind of dramatically upgraded last year when President Yoon Suk-yeol attended the NATO summit. And what was signed was called ITPP, Individually Tailored Partnership Program. Mm. Korea as a major power in this part of the region, having relationship with NATO is very important. A lot of people noted. And then it was such relationship was established based on this ITPP, Individually Tailored Partnership Program agreement. And this ITPP program covers a lot of different issues. For example, anti-terrorism, like climate change cooperation, not to mention cybersecurity and all that kind of stuff. So when the Supreme Allied Commander Europe came into town, when he met with National Security Advisor here, they discussed the future course of strengthening ITPP, which matters greatly for Korea. Korea has what's called Indo-Pacific strategy of its own. And that strategy has to be further fortified with cooperation through NATO members as well. So in that sense, that first issue is very important. Second issue, the Ukraine situation. And we perhaps need more details about what was discussed. Probably it's not going to be provided publicly here. But, NATO is in need for greater support in terms of helping Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And I would guess there was a greater demand on the side of the NATO for Korea to help further, and then we will have to see how it gets into practice. So the demand for helping Ukraine more probably was there. And then how to deal with Russia and North Korea working together, North Korea sending ammunition and Russia helping North Korea with the high advanced level technologies for satellites and even nuclear weapons and so on. That's a big concern. And so those are the issues that Korea is much more and very much interested in. So I think in days that will come ahead, we will find out what is it that's going on between NATO and Korea in terms of the bilateral cooperation. Again, this is very important cooperation mechanism that matters for Korea. That's why they had meeting with not only National Security Advisor, but also Defense Minister as well.
Right. The big three that you just mentioned, Korea, NATO cooperation, the scope of perhaps aid to Ukraine and Russia, North Korea's increasing military cooperation.
Right.
We'll wait and see in the coming days what comes out. Monday last week, that's when Sweden's entry into NATO was finalized. That's after 2 years in the works. This day, say, results in Russia being virtually blocked in the Baltic Sea. So what is your analysis?
You know, those people who are critical of Russia find great excitement and joy in seeing this getting materialized, because they say, look, Putin started Ukraine situation to begin with in order to kind of stop the expansion of NATO. He wanted to like make sure that there will be no further growth of NATO. But now what do we get? You know, Finland joined, and then now Sweden joined, and NATO has expanded greatly, dramatically, in reaction to the Ukraine situation. So Tony Blinken, U.S. State, you know, Secretary of State, actually called this this kind of, you know, growth of NATO is a critical defeat for Russia, strategic defeat, you know, going the opposite direction that Russia had you know, pursued in the first first place in initiating the attack in Ukraine. So Sweden joining NATO is a major thing, because as you mentioned, Sweden has been kind of independent, you know, not belonging to any of the side, even during the Cold War, right? Cold War was a very severely divided world, but Sweden maintained its neutrality. But now it's joining NATO as a reaction to the Ukraine situation. Sweden is important because Sweden is a very powerful country in terms of military strength. You know, they can produce their own the jet fighters, for instance. They have a very strong navy. So, you know, we know now Sweden joining the NATO is important, but we know right before this, like, I guess last year, April, Finland joined as well. Finland is also another country that has remained and maintained neutrality for some time. And now, as you mentioned, with Finland and Sweden joining, the Baltic Sea, yes, indeed, it is blocked. Russia will have a great difficulty in projecting its military force through the Baltic Sea now, with its naval vessels, including submarines and so on. Getting out of Baltic Sea is very difficult. It's going to be very difficult. Everybody will be watching them. And so their naval force and military force as a whole will be very much seriously compromised. Baltic Sea is very important for Russia because they have a very important strategic, military-wise, very important city called Kaliningrad. Kaliningrad has been a very important military base for Soviet force and then Russia force. But now, you know, because it's sitting at the nearby Baltic Sea, and because Baltic Sea is blocked, the value of this strategic location is greatly compromised. And St. Petersburg is also nearby as Baltic Sea. And so in many different ways, Russia loses big time with the Sweden joining NATO. There's no question about that.
And Sweden also has, on top of the jets you mentioned, as submarines that can control the large parts of the Baltic Sea. It would be able to match Russia's every move. So militarily, it's a big advantage. They wasted no time. Norway, Sweden, and Finland already began hosting the first joint NATO military exercise with 20,000 soldiers already involved. Professor Kim, but despite the expansion, NATO members' anxiety seems to only grow because of the Trump factor looming in the U.S. and the prolonged war in Ukraine. What seems to be the problem there?
Yeah, the issue here is the comparison or I wouldn't say conflict, but the contrast between short-term situation and long-term situation. Short-term, the Europeans are in trouble because they have relied upon the United States so long for so much, in a way, and they're not exactly immediately ready to have sufficient military capability to defend themselves, like the same way as there will be a situation where there's no Trump, you know, like let's say Biden stays in the White House And that situation being maintained on one hand, and Trump coming in and the situation changing. The second scenario, they'll face a great difficulty indeed. So they're desperate and they're really moving fast in terms of building their capability. They realize this as they, for example, that they had promised, for instance, by March this year, this is the month, March, I guess. This month, by this month, they're going to send a lot of ammunitions. They're going to achieve a dramatic increase of supply of ammunitions to Ukraine, but that's not coming through. They just don't have the capability. And this is a major shortcoming that they're experiencing. And the United States Congress has long refused to approve the bill to increase support for Ukraine as well. So in the short term, they're very, very desperate and they have to really quickly move to in order to increase their capability. Some of the Korean industry experts notice here that there is a greater opportunity for Korea to supply what Europeans need in terms of defense industry. And so it could be some considerable gains for Korea right there as well. But in the long run, some of the strategic the expert in military strategy point out that this could be actually good for Europe, that they face this kind of urgent need to fortify and strengthen their defense capability, because in the long run that means they can stand alone by themselves, more independent from the United States, and then they will in once they increase their defense capability, there will be greater freedom on the side of European allies to operate the way they want. So this is a blessing in disguise. We'll have to wait and see how that turns out, but the level of anxiety for sure is what we see here.
Let's also maybe elaborate on the military aid to Ukraine and the possibility of its expansion by NATO. Last week's headlines was filled also by the exchanges over the possibility of NATO sending its troops to help Ukraine. What do we need to know in the heated war of words that came out last week?
Yeah, this was something that's very interesting in the eyes of the experts. What does this all mean? I don't think there's a consensus in terms of what it means, but what do we mean by it? The complicated situation first began with the Prime Minister of Slovakia, Robert Pico actually mentioned. By the way, this Prime Minister of Slovakia. The country, Slovakia itself, is a NATO member, but Prime Minister himself is rather relatively kind of pro-Russia. And so he came out kind of criticizing what NATO, the EU was doing. He came out saying, oh, we just had this gathering in Paris, and where the EU members talked about how to help Ukraine better. And they were talking about combat strategies and strategy of conflict and stuff like that. And there were even ideas of sending troops, ground troops into Ukraine discussed. He came out disclosing that. And huge controversy broke out as a result of it. And they're saying, is this true or not? And some people are saying, well, the Prime Minister of Slovakia, he's a pro-Russia, so he's just doing this to just check the waters and so on. There are different speculations. Interesting thing is, however, Macron, the French president, came out saying nothing has been ruled out, and European Union members are very strongly committed to helping Ukraine in any way possible. So, Prime Minister of Slovakia, President of France, kind of started off this controversy. But quickly, however, the situation kind of came back to what it was before, as different countries like Poland and the other allies, physically located close to Russia especially, came out saying there's no such possibility of sending ground troops to Russia. And NATO and Europe maintains the same stance in a way of helping Ukraine all the way it can, but without sending troops, without militarily getting involved in the conflict. European Union and NATO members will support Ukraine all the way. Now, that position was issued by Germany, UK, Italy, and Spain as well, along with these NATO members physically located close to Russia. So The overall debate kind of came back to the situation where it was before. However, the analysts and strategists noticed that there is a chasm or division, disagreement among the NATO and EU members here. And something this is something that the world will have to watch closely as European Union members, NATO members trying to strengthen their independent capability for their own defense. So we'll have to wait and see on that. And also, last point on that point is Putin actually issued a warning of a possibility of using nuclear weapons. So some people are saying, does this mean kind of indication of Russia's weakness? Nuclear weapons is a last resort, and Russia is really afraid in this case. The further unity, solidarity of NATO, is Russia desperate? What does this gesture symbolizes? I think the speculation still continues. We'll need more time to come up with better conclusion.
Professor Kim, if you don't mind, maybe we can circle back to the beginning of today's discussion. The big question for us might be, what does this all mean for Korea? Moscow has issued its warning repeatedly to Seoul. How do we deal with this challenge going forward?
As we discussed before, when we discussed Russia-North Korea cooperation, Russia has repeatedly come out warning Seoul kind of for, against further provocation, what they call kind of damaging relations between Seoul and Moscow. What that probably means is Korea sending ammunition directly to Ukraine. I think that's one of the first things we can think about. And Putin has issued some strong words. And this all goes together with Putin's threat of using nuclear weapons against Europe and so on. So this is the time, once again, that Seoul, Korea as a whole will have to think about the question of how to deal with Moscow. As we discussed before, the clear idea is this. For those of us who study and deal with international relations issue, the first starting point is the concept called anarchy. Anarchy is the notion that in the world there's no world government. So what that means is that countries have to be able to defend themselves, ultimately speaking. And the way we defend ourselves, there are things called hard power and soft power. Hard power is military capability and economic power. Soft power is other countries' perception of us. So what it means is that we have to take care of our own interest in order to take care of our hard power. So we have to be very clearly mindful of what it is the national interest dictates in terms of what we should do in dealing with countries countries like Russia. There's a clear a point in that. But together with that, principles, values, what is it that we are for? What is it that we uphold? That's also important because that's soft power base. Without that, country cannot be respected, and other countries will perceive us as a country wishy-washy, will go with the change of winds. Our soft power base will be greatly compromised. So we have to keep in mind both principles, values, and at the same time, hardcore interest as well. It's a very difficult balancing game, but this is what makes international relations all the more interesting.
Thank you very much, Professor Kim. We appreciate your insights as always. We'll speak to you again next week.
Thank you very much.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.